It's all Bills all day. Buffalo Bills Football Friday, exclusively on WGR Sports Radio 550.
Brought to you by Celino Law. Car crash? Call Celino. And by Crosby's Pizza and Subs. Start your game day the Crosby's way.
Stephon Diggs, no longer a Buffalo Bill. Jarring, but not shocking.
Look, at the end of the day, this is Josh Allen's offense. You're going to put together the offense around the guys that you got. You know, there'll be some elements of things that I believe in. It's more of like, tell me who we have on our football team and the guys and what they can do well. We're going to do that.
It's a fun and wonderful thing when you got a bunch of guys that don't care about the stats, they don't care about the touchdowns. And again, I think throughout practice, we've just had this mindset of like, hey, let's just do things the right way and find ways to win football games. That's what we're doing right now.
Allen back to pass, looking right, now over the middle, complete to Shakir, races away from the defender, 10, 5, spins into the end zone for the touchdown. Pressure coming, fires down the right side, looking for Coleman, he's got it, and he's into the end zone. The rookie with his first touchdown as a pro. Back to pass, Allen wide open to Cook in the left flat, racing to the end zone. Is he in? Yes, he is. The Cook has found the kitchen.
You're listening to Jeremy and Joe on the home of the Bills, WGR Sports Radio 550.
Football Friday, brought to you by Celino Law. Car crash, call Celino. By Crosby's Pizza and Sub. Start your game to the Crosby's way. We've got a Sabres game, too. Sabres season starts in 6 hours. Let's go.
Friday afternoon game.
We'll get Paul Hamilton next segment to preview that. Of course, it is a Football Friday. It was a game last night, Atlanta and Tampa. It was a fun one. And Bills-Texans is a big one. We go to the Western Hotline and welcome in Mr. Sal Capaccio. Fun game last night, Sal. A lot of talent on display. I said to Joe, it might have been the best fantasy footballer game of the year because in that game, everybody ate. You know, everybody you might want to got a lot.
For sure. Actually, Max plays, I play, and we both have Drake London. So I literally woke him up this morning. When he woke up, I said, you had a good fantasy night last night, buddy, because, you know, we knew early on, Drake London was doing well. And then he has the kicker for Atlanta, Koo, as well. So, you know, a couple of misses, but he had a really nice night. So it's a great night last night. Man, I'm watching the Mets game. Alonso, wow, that was just a big-time home run. I mean, how many of us weren't thinking about Howard Simon when that happened, right? Pretty awesome. Really good night last night. As far as the Sabres are concerned, did we talk yesterday about, real quick, I was on a couple times yesterday, about the afternoon game back when I was a kid?
No,
I don't think so. No.
Did you tell you? Okay, so you guys can look this up, too. People, listeners will know. I tweeted about this yesterday. 1983, guys, I was in fourth grade. Sabres were in the second round of the playoffs against the Boston Bruins. They had to play a Friday weekday afternoon playoff game because the Celtics played at night at the Garden. So they played the Bruins during the day on a Friday afternoon in the playoffs in April, and then the Celtics played at night. So literally, like, it's an afternoon game, and I tweeted a picture. I said, my fourth grade teacher wheeled this bad boy in the room. It was one of those big carts with the TV on it. Remember that, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
So, like, the whole class watched. Sabres were down early. They lost, like, 5-3 that game. But today reminds me of that because I said to my son, what do you have at 1 o'clock today? What class? And he's like, why? Are you picking me up? I said, no. I want to know if your teacher's going to show
you
the Sabres game today. Yeah. I know, right?
Yeah.
Because I said, hey, I know there's teachers listening. It's Friday. Do the right thing. Let them watch the Sabres today.
Yeah.
Just letting you know, wherever you are out there, come on, let them watch the Sabres
today. Yeah, I mean, core memories as a kid, when that television wheeled into a room, you're like, the bliss.
Yes.
That was joy that you could feel in that moment. All right, well, the Sabres start.
And in this case, it was an actual hockey game for a playoff game in the afternoon. It was wild.
I can't remember ever maybe March Madness. Maybe that happened a few times for me, March Madness. Yeah. But I mean, there would have never been an afternoon Sabre game for this opportunity, and football's on weekends, and the Bills played every Sunday. So, yeah, that's cool, though. Game 83, I'm looking at that game box score real quick, of course. There's Lindy Ruff with 12 penalty minutes, of course, in the game.
The Sabres, by the way, they did
put... Was it 5-3, right, Joe?
5-3.
It was 5-3.
Yep, you're on it, yep.
The Sabres did put out one of those mock excuses, like, please excuse so-and-so from work today because the Sabres have a game at 1 o'clock. So
see?
I saw that tweeted out if anyone wants to try and use that. They're hosting a watch party, too, at KeyBank Center tomorrow, for tomorrow's afternoon game, which tomorrow's at 11 o'clock, Joe.
10 o'clock for Sabres and Devils tomorrow.
Okay, yep. Doors open at 9 for the watch
party. Did
you
guys see the fans at Citi Field yesterday after they Alonso's home run?
Sal, I'm glad.
And they showed the watch party going on.
I'm glad
at Citi
you mentioned
Field.
That. I wanted to start by asking if you'd ever been to a watch party, and I know you'll appreciate the one of the few ones I went to. I went to the Carrier Dome to see Syracuse play Mississippi State in the Final Four. And beat them to go to the final, where they ultimately lost to Kentucky. But I went to a watch party at the Carrier Dome, 10,000 people, and it's just like watching that atmosphere in Citi Field last night was awesome, because there's at least 10,000 people there going nuts for that home run.
It was crazy, right? Watching it from TV. I have been to one watch party, and you guys will really appreciate this. The one watch party I went to was Game 3 of the Stanley Cup, Sabres and Stars, at then Pilot Field, which is now Salem Field. And they had it on the big video board in center field. And Sabres lost that game because they lost 3, and I went to 4. I always get it mixed up. They lost 3 and they won 4, right? Because I went to the one they won. But the one they lost, I did go to a watch party at the baseball stadium downtown during the Stanley Cup.
Yeah. Makes me wonder. I mean, the 13 seconds year. Like, there was no watch party for that I know of at the stadium. I wonder if, you know,
COVID stuff so would have been happening,
that's what
right?
I'm thinking, right? Like, you have the AFC Championship game year. That, of course, that's the Baltimore game where there's only 10,000 people in the stands. Anyway, let's get some games that are meaningful enough to have 20,000 people, 30,000 people watch them on TV together. Let's have some watch parties. All right. So, on to the Texans. We'll do the injury report because there's some important names on here and things to monitor. The Barnes Firm injury report brought to you by the Barnes Firm car crash. For help, call 1-800-8-MILLION. Good news, bad news. You decide what we get first and what we're tracking.
I guess you'll start with the bad news. Don't you always say, give me the bad news first, and you end on a positive note, right?
Yep.
The bad news is 2 days in a row now for Khalil Shakir to not practice. He has dealing with that ankle injury. We'll find out today. Sean McDermott will join me on the Extra Point Show today. We'll get more of an update on what practice looks like or if he's declaring anybody out for the game. But 2 days in a row for Khalil Shakir, 2 days in a row for Taylor Rapp, and the difference was yesterday, guys, didn't even see him because on Wednesday, saw him working off to the side, did not see him at all on Thursday. Not that it has to mean anything, but he was not on the field again. And then the other bad news today was, or yesterday was, Ed Oliver shows up on the injury report with a hamstring injury. Now, let me give you some context on this so everybody knows. So typically, if you see a guy just shows up one day, he's not on, the next day he's limited with an injury, you typically believe that he got hurt at practice. And I will tell you that, of course, that's the case in some capacity here, but early in practice yesterday, I saw Ed Oliver being worked on, his hamstring. Like, he was laying down on the grass, and trainers were kind of just working on his leg, almost like massaging or whatever. They're going over things. They were talking to him for a while. He got up and joined the rest of his position group in drills, and he just was normal after that to me, like I'm watching. So for the part that I watched, he did get his hamstring worked on, then he just joined his position group, and then the media left. So it is possible he left again or something happened after that, but it also could be he's just limited because of that particular little bit that happened, if that makes sense, right? So I don't want to freak out on that yet. I just want to give context to what happened there, that what I know from my vantage point. Defensive tackle Austin Johnson also missed his second straight day with an oblique injury. So I guess that is the bad news. The good news is the Bills get Deion Dawkins back yesterday. He was limited with the hamstring, but he was back. He said he hurt it on that first fourth down the Bills ran early on. Remember I told you guys it was early in the game, right? Mm-hmm. He said it was painful. He thought about not even playing as he was working through it, but he played the rest of the game, and he did that. The other good news is Terrell Bernard continues to progress. He was limited again, and just seems like he's kind of, to me, full steam ahead here. And Taron Johnson's the one that we're really wondering because he's still in a red jersey. He is limited. He is practicing, but I still did not see him do anything that required any sort of contact with a bag or a player or anything like that.
Did you know? Is he wearing like a cast or anything while he's practicing?
Yes,
Sal? He is.
Well, I shouldn't say it's a cast. I don't know if it's a cast, Joe. It's a
something.
He has some sort of brace or something on his arm, but it's all wrapped with medical wrap. You know what I mean?
Sure.
I can't think of the name now. Anyway, so it's all wrap. So there's something under there. Certainly, it's a cast, brace, whatever that's under there.
I wonder, because of the nature of the injury, it being a forearm injury, if that would be one where, it isn't, the injury wouldn't even be limiting what he can do in practice. they just don't feel the need for him to take any unnecessary contact. You know what I mean? Because it's not like a knee injury. Like it's a different type of injury than I think we're used to seeing.
Yeah, it's a good point. I mean, you could do that and then say, but by game time, hey, you know, I mean, he might take a shot or two, but at least we're not making it worse before then and putting him in harm's way. So
right.
We'll see. Is he? It feels a lot to me like he was in the same boat. He's in the same boat now as Bernard was last week, which is he's practicing. He's in a red jersey, but they're ramping him up, and he's not quite ready. But we'll find out a little bit more today. We'll hear what Sean McDermott says when he, you know, joins the Extra Point Show.
On the other side for Houston, Sal, Laremy Tunsil back at practice for them. The thing maybe to monitor there, though, is their running back situation because the Bills just got, you know, torched on the ground by Derrick Henry. And here's Houston where, I mean, it's possible they're down to their third-string running back again.
Yeah, no doubt. So Joe Mixon and Damian Pierce both missed a second straight day. Joe Mixon has been their starter, and then without him, Cam Akers. So I guess you'd say Cam Akers is, you know, is he viewed as a third or the second, whatever it is. He's not put up the same numbers as Joe Mixon. They were very good early in the season with Joe Mixon running the ball. Not quite as efficient with Cam Akers. I think he's averaging a full yard less per carry than Joe Mixon. But Damian Pierce, Joe Mixon, they both have missed two straight days. Yes, Laremy Tunsil returned to the practice field. Also, Tank Dell returned the other day. He did practice for 2 days in a row, so obviously he's trending. And the way that their coaches were talking about him, like, sounds like he's going to play. But he does have those rib injuries that I'm sure are pretty painful, and it caused him to miss a couple of weeks. But you're right. That's the thing to watch for the Texans is their running back situation.
Sal Capaccio joining us on the Western Hotline as we prepare for Bills and Texans Sunday, 1 o'clock. Sal, we have a Twitter poll up about who should get a little more on their plate, right? The Bills, their mantra this year is everybody eats, and we're wondering if anybody needs to eat a little bit more. The Twitter poll is Shakir. Of course, the injury could be a factor there. Kincaid, Curtis Samuel, or Keon Coleman. And this week, the topic seems to be Samuel and how he's being used in this offense, whether the injury is a factor. Do you think we should start to expect to see him involved a little bit more? I know Brady mentioned it, and then McDermott kind of said the ball goes who it's supposed to go to. So maybe that kind of means Brady's going to make sure to find ways where the ball is supposed to find Curtis Samuel in this offense.
Yeah, that's the guy I would choose. I mean, I think that Dalton Kincaid can be a really terrific player. And there's no arguments for me if you want to keep throwing the ball to Dalton Kincaid, right? I mean, that's fine. I just think that the way this offense is structured and how they've gone about it, you have opportunity that should be there for Curtis Samuel. And I don't understand really why that hasn't materialized yet. You know, from my vantage point, like, you brought him in, you paid him $8 million a year. It's not an exorbitant amount, but it's enough. He's, you know, getting a decent contract, and he was very good in 2020 with Joe Brady as his offensive coordinator. Joe Brady knew how to use him. He was very productive. We've seen kind of nothing like that so far. He has 8 catches for 48 yards. He has carried the ball twice for 7 yards. By the end of the year, he, you know, if you told me he only had 20 carries, I think I'd be like, okay, maybe it sounds a little low because he had been at over 40 one year, he'd over 30 another year, you know, so even in that regard, like, just finding ways to get him the ball. But let's just say throwing the ball. They need somebody other than a slot receiver or a tight end, somebody on the outside to be able to threaten the defense in some way. It doesn't have to necessarily be going vertical. Although Samuel can do that, it's not, I mean, he's a fast player. He can run. But they need somebody to at least threaten the defense on the outside. And to me, that's the number one option for me, just based on even circumstance. Great. It'd be great if Keon Coleman could be that guy. All right. I just don't think that we should expect that right now. It'd be awesome if he could be. And he made a couple of really nice back shoulder catches, of course. But I'm not going to put that on him right now. I think that, you know, he's actually kind of where I thought he'd be right now at this point, Coleman. He's got 8 catches, 126 yards, and he's kind of being integrated the way I expected him to be integrated.
Yeah, we kind of talked about it yesterday about Coleman, Sal, and I wonder if there's any sort of feeling down there or what people are saying about his first 4 games. My evaluation is, like, this is going fine. Everything seems to be going just fine. You know, sure, there could be more, but I don't see anything that's troubling at all. I think things are going to plan, and I wonder, you know, where, if there's a breakout game or a slow ramping up. I'm thinking about Kincaid last year, who early on, you know, he was a part of the offense and it grew. And think about Shakir's arc. Took him a while to really become a feature of this offense. I wouldn't expect waiting that long. But for Coleman, it probably comes in time. Yeah?
Yeah, I think so, for sure. And what you said, too, like, he's even more featured right now than Dalton was early in the season last year, it seems like. I'd have to go back and look at those numbers, but you're right. It just seems like there's a big play or two. They go to him every week. Think about week one down the sidelines against the Cardinals, makes that really nice catch. And week two was really nobody needed to the way that the game went. Week three, he catches that really nice touchdown. He doesn't even play the first quarter. Josh goes to him on the crosser. He has the touchdown against the Jacksonville Jaguars. And then last week, like I said, two really nice catches on back shoulder throws. He also had the drop, and you know, you want to clean that up. But you know, he did a really nice job on those other two throws. So I think that they're trusting him. I think that they're not afraid to throw to him. And I think it's going, as you say, just fine. I just can't figure out why Curtis Samuel's not more involved. And yes, Joe Brady did address that when he was asked about it on Monday, which is, you know, him saying, it's also to the amount of time he's on the field. Like, if he's only on the field, you know, 30 something snaps, I mean, you're not throwing it to him 10 times in 30 something snaps. So it just seems like it has to be both on the field more, and then that has to translate into being targeted a little bit more and finding ways to get him the ball. He's a good football player.
Do you think, while we're on the offense, Sal, do you think you have a good idea of like what this offensive line is going to be like for the whole year? Because they looked like one of the best units in the league for 3 weeks, and then last week was just so porous and just in general. I know some of that was the running backs and communication, but man, last week against Baltimore just couldn't have looked different from the first few weeks on how pressured Allen was. And this Texans team with their edge rushers, I mean, they've got Daniil Hunter, Will Anderson, like even Jerry Hughes still's hanging around there. Like, they've got good pass rushers, especially on the edge. So I think maybe this will be another big test for how good their line's actually going to be this year.
It's pretty amazing. Jerry Hughes is still playing, you know?
Yeah.
He's 36 years old. We were looking up that yesterday. My wife and I were talking about it because Deion Dawkins said he bought Jerry Hughes' house after Jerry Hughes left. He's pretty amazing. You know, it's just a guy that's been in the league and put in a lot of work and has done some really nice things, put up some decent numbers. But you're right. Outside of him, obviously, they have some really nice pass rushers. Okay, so last week, I also think the injury to Deion mattered last week, guys. I mean, I'm not excusing at all. I don't think Deion Dawkins had his best game last week, but I think he was fighting through that injury, as we know now. And there were some times where I think there's some plays that he just wasn't the same. And that obviously contributed to some of that pressure. You're right, the running backs were not good in pass protection. There seemed to be some communication issues. Loud stadium, loud environment. Remember, they hadn't faced that yet. They went to Miami. It wasn't that bad, right? Especially early on in the game, you take the crowd out of the game. So it's going to be the same thing this week. You have to be buttoned up. That's a loud stadium. The roof will be closed in Houston. They always have it closed. They did have it open for one preseason game this year, a Sunday night game, because it hadn't been repaired yet after a hurricane last year. They had to fix some of the roof. But I'm told it will be closed. It's always closed. And I say that because I've been there when it's been closed a couple of times. It is a loud stadium. It's very boxy, and you're going to have those communication issues need to be straightened out. Joe, I like the Bills' offensive line. I think they have a good offensive line. I think through the first 3 weeks, you could say that is a top 3, 4, 5 at worst, maybe offensive line in the league. They didn't play like it last week, but I think here's an opportunity for them to, you know, kind of atone for that a little bit and, you know, get right some of the things that they saw that hopefully they can correct.
We'll talk with Mark Vandermeer, voice of the Texans, coming up at 9 o'clock.
My buddy. Yeah. He's great. Ask him about going out for ice cream in Buffalo.
Okay. Well, Joe, remember that because I'll forget.
Ice cream in Buffalo. Okay.
Yes. On their side of the ball, or their side here, Sal, I mean, of course, Diggs is the headline around here. But defensively, they've got a pair of really good edge rushers. The story on the Texans seems to be those two are great, but the rest of the defense can be had, especially in the secondary. And I wonder if, you know, Joe Brady's got the answers for this. Maybe it's a game where they do hit over the top. But teams have been able to throw it on Houston. I mean, that Anthony Richardson highlight to Alec Pierce early in the year, that was over top of the Texans' defense. So maybe this is a team they can hit deep.
Yeah, you'd like to see that, you know, that start to be incorporated a little bit in the offense, if the Bills can take advantage of that. You look at their rankings overall, passing yards per game, actually, they're doing a pretty good job overall. They're fifth in the league, but I think what you're saying, Jeremy, is right. They've given up a few big plays here or there. They're pretty consistent, though. They're actually, what teams have been able to do is run on them a little bit and then hit them with a big play. Their numbers against the run. These two teams, the Bills are last in the league in yards per play against on the ground, And the Texans are 25th in the league in yards per play against on the ground. So you may see both teams here just try to control the game by running it and then hit it with the big play. You know, I expect at some point in this game the Texans to throw the ball to Stephon Diggs and try and get him a touchdown or you know, something like that. So they'll both teams will take their shots. I would tell you I'm pretty sure about that. But I think that the game plan, the game script here might be, hey, we're going to run the ball at these guys and try to control the game that way, and that'll open up an opportunity for us to throw it.
And one last thing on all this, because we haven't talked about it yet, Sal, like Devontae Adams' watch. There's still some reporting about it. There's Dan Racine reporting that the Bills and the Chiefs are monitoring it. There's plenty of reporting he wants to go to the Jets. I don't particularly think that it's likely, but there is an awful lot of reporting about monitoring, and I think it's believable that the Bills could be interested if things fell the right way. Would you rule it out? Is it just, you know, 5%? Do you have any sort of feel on it?
Here's my feel. This is not something I think the Bills would do, like, right now. React. Immediate. Even if the Raiders said, look, we got to get a deal done. I just don't think the Bills aren't an organization that typically acts that way. But monitoring it probably is a very good word because, okay, let's see what happens the next few weeks. This is something I think the Bills would be more interested in if they are towards the trade deadline.
Yeah.
Let's see where we are. We don't have to make a move. We're 3-1. We'll see how things shake out here. We're not going to make a knee-jerk reaction move, and all of a sudden now we're bringing in a 32-year-old receiver with a higher salary and commands a lot of targets. The things that they went away from Stephon Diggs, I'm sure the Bills, like everybody, know and feel that Devontae Adams is one heck of a football player. He's an elite wide receiver in this league. But a move like that, I think, requires a little bit more of a let's make sure we're doing this for the right reasons and it's going to be beneficial for us and what we're giving up, what we're paying. That doesn't sound like a move to me that the Bills would make right now, even if the Raiders said, we got to move on this, we got to act on this, unless they're giving him away basically and eating all his salary, right? Then you just say, okay, well, I guess we're gonna do this and there's really little risk for us. So that's how I would see it. But yeah, I think they would be monitoring it. Why wouldn't they? I mean, that's, you know, it's called doing your job, right? And I think that's what Brandon Bean would do. Brandon Bean always, he'll never shy away from it. He says he's always listening. He's always looking. He's always monitoring things like that to see where they go.
Yeah, and basically, I like where you land on that. I kind of feel the same way, which is in 3-4 more weeks, I mean, the deadline is in 27 days. So in 3.5 weeks, we'll have more games where it's like, oh, yeah, teams have really decided to lock in the middle of the field. We need someone to open it up on the outside. Maybe that's Amari Cooper. Maybe it's a receiver yet to be named. But they have a little bit more time to find out just how much help they really need. And also injuries, you know. Somebody else could get hurt. They could need a linebacker. They could need a safety. You might need those things now. But you know, there's still a lot of season to come, and the deadline is the event where you really decide, all right, what's the thing we need the most? So it is a little early for any team to make a trade. I think that's true of the Jets, too, to be honest. So what time for McDermott today?
We are working on that. I'll let everybody know. I'll let everybody know. Typically about 10:45, but last week was a little bit earlier. There was a Sunday night game. I don't know if the schedule is a little different. So we'll let everybody know. But sometime between 10 and 12, be on the lookout for it. And then, of course, Patrick Hammer at 11:30. That'll be more for everybody to, if anybody's going to Houston or down in that area for the game. We're also going to look at the London game this week and also, you know, a peek ahead. Oh, the other thing with Pat, the advisory versus watch. He's aware, and we're going to discuss it.
All right, good. Should we be on advisory, by the way, Sunday morning for like when Diggs and Allen and teammates like might be hugging pregame or whatever? Like when should we be logging on Twitter to see what's happening with all that?
Yeah, I would definitely say so. We're probably looking, what, about 10:30? It's before the last, when it was Gabe Davis, it was before fans were in the stands yet. Mm-hmm. Fans were let in at 2 hours before the game, so it's 2.5 maybe to 3, so somewhere around there. So that would be, what, 10 o'clock hour?
All right. If you're interested in that sort of thing, which I know a lot of Bills fans will be. All right. Thanks, Al.
You got it, guys.
Paul Hamilton, when we get back, mixing in a Sabres season preview, game preview. They play today, 1 o'clock, against the New Jersey Devils from Prague. Jeremy and Joe, it is a Football Friday here on WGR, brought to you by Selena Law, and by Crosby's Pizza. Crosby's subs, start your game day the Crosby's way. When we get back, Paul on the Sabres.